And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello. Today's Wednesday, April 19th. NHL playoffs have started. The Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils are in. The NBA playoffs have started. The Knicks and Nets are playing. Baseball, close to finishing week three. Yankees and Mets both playing well. NFL draft next week. Golf, the RBC Heritage crowned the champion. The Kentucky Derby's getting closer. Take a ride with us on the world of sports. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren and Kevin. Listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts. I like all the posts we're getting. We're getting a lot of people talking to us about hockey. Kev, let's start with some NHL playoff hockey.
Well, there's only one place we can start. The New York Islanders, Carolina Hurricanes. As we record this, overtime is just about to start in game two. Islanders lost a tough one in game one, 2-1. Two power play goals by Carolina. Carolina outshot the Islanders 37-26. But it was a typical, except for the special teams, it was a typical Islander performance. Close, hard-hitting, you know, defensive battle, just like we expect to see the whole series. Game two, they were down 2-0. The second goal by Carolina was a fluky goal. The Islanders bounced back with three straight. Florida forced overtime on a goal that went in off the back of Sorokin's helmet, if you can believe that.
Ridiculous.
So we're sitting here 3-3 in overtime. Any thoughts on the series so far?
Well, a couple things. Number one, Sorokin's been great, actually, except for a couple of fluke goals. Number two, the Horvat-Barzal thing, when Barzal actually starts to get the feel again, I mean, Horvat wins like every faceoff. It's really kind of cool to watch, and he's not afraid to dig in the corners, and Barzal actually gives the Islanders that puck transporter that you taught me last week, Kevin, or was it you, Gino? One of you guys mentioned that there's a role as Kev with the puck transporter that gets it from blue line to blue line in the power play. The problem is Carolina had no power play coming into the series, and now all of a sudden they've got three power play goals in two games. So it just shouldn't be. They're going to have to do a little bit of a better job on the penalty kill in order to win this series. But if they can steal this one and get out of here 1-1, it would be really huge for the Isles.
They need to stay out of the penalty box. So far tonight, technically Carolina is 1-for-6 on the power play. The Islanders technically 0-for-0. Two double minors for high sticking on the Islanders. One of them negated by the only Carolina penalty and two other minors for the Islanders. And as Butch Goring says, this was after the Islanders' last penalty gave Carolina the late power play opportunity. He goes, all the Islanders' penalties have been penalties. His concern was the amount of opportunities. You mean to tell me the Carolina's been perfect and have not committed a penalty yet?
Probably not the case.
Probably not. But this will be big overtime for the Islanders. If they can pull this one out, they split on the road, which is what their goal is. If they lose, they go back home. It's still 2-0. And like Darren, you said off mic here, it's never – the series is really not – isn't really started until a road team loses.
Until a road team loses at home. Until a team loses.
I mean, yep.
And I said it the same way as you did before when I said it to your first time. I flubbed it and you reflubbed it, G.
So I did not like the way the Islanders played in game one. They only lost 2-1. I thought they played good in that third period, but I really didn't like the way they played the first and second periods. Tonight, I think they've come out and they really played well. New group on the ice, so maybe they just need a little time to adapt to some playoff hockey, maybe. A lot of veterans on this team, so you wouldn't think so. But, you know, I like the way they come out. I like the way they play tonight. Again, you said it, the goals, you know, those weren't big-time goals off the goalie's helmet and stuff, so I think they played well. Hopefully they come out with a win here in overtime.
Yep.
Florida goes up 2 goals tonight right by now. They're up 4-2 on Boston in the third. I'm just, yep. You know, whatever. You want to find a sport where the eight seeds are always alive? This is that sport. Not the Spitz teams, but I'm just saying.
That and Boston, Florida's game two also. Boston won the first game 3-1. So, you know, big Florida, if they can come out with a win, they could definitely tie this up and put Boston against the ropes here. Everyone's thinking Boston's unbeatable at the moment. So we'll see what happens. Kev?
We had Boston in 4-4-5.
Yeah, I was the only one that gave them a win. Florida. But the thing was, Florida actually outshot them in game one also by double. I think it was 29-19 or something like that. They kind of controlled them. And then here in game two, same thing. Not to try to go away from the Islanders. I was just saying it was interesting to see them go up 4-2 against the team with the greatest record in the history of the NHL. I just don't
And I think they're missing Patrice Bergeron a little bit. He's missed the first two games. They're calling it with an illness. But he also got injured, banged up in that last regular season game. You don't know if there's a bit of a carryover plus the illness. You know how secretive hockey teams are on injuries. It's always a lower body injury.
Flu going through the whole team. A lot of these guys are skating a little weak and maybe a step slow.
I mean, he's one of their stars, but you would think on a team that won that many games that one guy being out of the lineup doesn't completely
would not be that big a deal. Yeah,
agreed.
And listen, we're acting like there's a demise. It might be 1-1, you know, so it's not like nothing's really happened, you know, just one of those scenarios. Overall, you know, Islanders, you know, you love to steal this one if you can. But the fact of the matter is, as Barzal and Horvat play together, I think that line's going to become really potent. Anders Lee looks a step slow to me. As he's getting older, he just doesn't seem to have it. But they have two lines that can score and, you know, they just need a little bit more. They just need a little bit more offense to kind of get this thing rolling. That's all.
Yep. And Barzal did have a goal tonight.
Yep.
The other local series, the Rangers and Devils played game one Tuesday night. Rangers won very easily, I thought, 5-1.
Yep.
This game was over early. Rangers scored a couple of goals early and just dominated, surprisingly.
So in this series, I really feel like the Devils came out really shy in this, especially in that first period. They looked timid on the ice. They look like a bunch of rookies trying to gain their footing, and maybe that is the case. Curious to see how they come out in game two, because you could definitely see it that specifically that first period and really the first like 16 minutes. They were like completely on their heels. They never were pressing at all. And I'm curious to see how this team now responds. You got a lot of young guys on this team, so we'll see how they respond. Darren?
Yeah, the one thing that I thought was really crucial for the Devils was getting that goal, even though it was a penalty shot goal. Sometimes that lid is on the net. You can't put anything in. And, you know, you don't put one Pai Shesterkin, who's, again, maybe he hasn't had the year he had the last couple of years, but he's still world-class. Like Sorokin, either one of those two guys can steal a series. It's the reason I picked the Rangers over the Devils in the series, simply because of the goaltending. Like, I agree with you guys. Young team, you know, you were hoping Palat would kind of give them a little bit of a push on how to handle playoff hockey. It certainly didn't work. Kreider seemed to have the advantage pushing the Rangers more than Palat did pushing the Devils. But the thing that stood out to me was that crucial goal. I just think just getting one by him is one of those things that could build momentum for the Devils. Obviously, you can't afford to go down 0-2 at home, or you don't think you can. Jake?
And listen, that being said with the Devils, I thought the Rangers played a great game last night. I mean,
they were
excellent. They were skating all over the place. They were forechecking. I mean, the way this was working, I thought the Rangers had a really good game plan the way this happened. They played a great game. Just curious to see how now if they can come back the Devils and give them a game. So we'll see what happens. Kev, tell us about your distraught face at the moment.
They're looking up trying to figure out what happened. The Islanders are protesting. The Carolina has scored a goal about 5 minutes into overtime. Islanders looking up, complaining about something, not sure what. They haven't left the ice yet.
It would appear for the moment that Carolina has won game 2-4-3 in overtime.
Yeah. Lambert's starting to walk off the ice.
What happened?
A little a little snapshot from right into the right over the blue line there. So we'll see what happens. I'm not sure what they're looking at. Are they looking at? It looks like they're looking at an offsides call and a splash, but looks like the goal's going to stand at the moment.
I mean, they get hit in the face, but not called. I mean, listen, you know what? It's just one of those things.
A couple of two double minors on the Islanders for high sticking, and you don't get that call?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's a bad call, but you know what? That's a hell of a goal, Soroka. He's got to stop that, man.
He does.
That's top corner.
That's a hell of a goal, man. Put it right over his shoulder.
This is what butterfly goaltending does, G. They all drop to their knees, and if you can shoot it high and hit the top corners of the net, you will score all day long.
And that's exactly what he did.
And that's what he did. He put it in a perfect spot.
Right over his right shoulder.
That's all it is.
It wasn't minor high stickings, and the Islanders can't get a high sticking call in overtime here. That's bull.
Well, if they should have gotten the call, it looks pretty clear that he got hit in the face.
You put the whistles away, but they called it late in the third period on the Islanders, and you get one in overtime that's blatantly in the high stick. That's ridiculous. Terrible refereeing there.
And then the other game, you got Sam Bennett with Bertuzzi in a headlock after Bertuzzi boards a Florida player, so that'll be interesting. They took them both off the ice 4-on-4. Horrible way to lose that one. You don't expect Sorokin to drop one. In overtime, you're hoping he carries you through. What you need is now the Islanders have to come back to the island and take their two back. Nothing's lost until you lose that home game. So you got to see what happens.
That's
what we said.
The other series in the East is Tampa-Toronto. Tampa really put a beating on Toronto. They won the first game 7-3. It looked like it was all Tampa from what I saw. You guys have any comments about that?
Yeah, well, Toronto living up to their playoff pedigree here.
I picked Toronto. I'm the only one, I think.
Tampa put 3 goals in the net in the first period and 3 goals in the net in the second period. And after 2, they were up 6-2. It was never in doubt at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Samsonov is not in the same the same level of a goalie, just one of those things. Toronto has all this firepower during the regular season, and they just never seem to be able to put it together. There are even series that they've been up 3-1 and haven't been able to hold on. Tampa is a world-class team. Just they are. The other interesting fact, just on all these games in the first round, only one other team won that didn't score a power play goal. Only one team won. That was Seattle. Every team's been putting the puck in the net on the power play in game one. It's just one of those things. The power play has been really, really, an indicator, so to speak, on the teams that have been winning so far. And we had 6 or 8 teams on the road win the first game.
Let's go out there. Seattle pulling off the surprise and 3-1 win over the Avalanche.
Yeah, I went to bed. I'd be lying to tell you I watched this. I saw the first goal. I saw 1-1. That was about as far as I got. But from everything I read and I saw, Seattle pretty much controlled this game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much more to say. Again, game one of a series is always, who knows. But, Seattle getting the jump, I thought was really interesting. The Kings, same thing happened to me in that series. It was, 2-0 Edmonton. I went to bed. I woke up, they won 4-3.
Yeah. Incredible comeback by the Kings there.
And like I said, that my only reason why I picked the Kings to win that series is I don't trust the Oilers between the pipes. If it's going to be a grind, if it's going to be an 8-5 game, Edmonton's going to win. If it's going to be a grind at 4-3, 3-2, Edmonton's going to lose. That's just what it is. Minnesota, Dallas playing game 2 right now. That Minnesota won the first one in double OT on the road as well.
Well, just going back to the Kings game, Oilers led 3-2 late. The Kings scored a power play goal with less than a minute left in regulation and scored the power play goal in overtime to win that game. You don't see unless they're blatant goals, you don't see power plays, especially one on late in overtime, one on the road.
On the road.
You just saw what happened on the road tonight. The Islanders don't get the call.
Yep.
hockey is one of those weird sports where the disparity of penalties, home and road, NBA similar, but hockey's really, really just right up there with that, with the disparity of home and road calls a lot. And it kind of stood out. You know, I mean, again, these series are all early. It was just interesting that six of the eight road teams kind of win it. The only one we didn't touch on was probably the most impressive one. Winnipeg dominated Las Vegas, dominated them. And I picked Winnipeg for the series because I like Hellebuck. He's the best goalie in the series. He was great.
5-1 win by the Jets.
Yeah, pretty much. Did you take Winnipeg with me, Kev, or was it just me?
I went with Vegas.
Because you did the whole Jets. I was trying to remember.
I said Jets. What's the wrong sport? I'll take Kings and six. Vegas and six, I think.
I just took Hellebuck to try to steal one.
But here's where hockey players are different breed. Morgan Barron. There was a scramble in front of the net. Morgan Barron for the Jets down on the ice, and he gets slashed in the face by the Golden Knights goalie. Blood all over, everything else. Goes to the locker room. 75 stitches. He comes out back out for the second period with a full cage on.
I mean, it's 75
stitches in the face.
It's the old story with Steve Ballmer in his first NHL shift. He got hit in the face with the puck, lost four teeth, didn't miss a shift.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. That's what these hockey players do. They're nuts.
LeBron James gets a cramp and pulls off an Academy Award performance.
5-2, by the way.
Wow.
Florida's laying it on Ullmark. I don't know if they gave up 5 goals in a game all year. Dallas up 2-0. They scored about the same time here. I had both games going on above me. Dallas 2-0, Florida 5-2. So, you know, Florida looks like they're going to even their series. Dallas is the first period, so anything can happen in that one.
Anything can happen there, yep.
Okay, any other NHL?
No, not for me.
All right, let's move to some NBA because we got the Knicks and Nets.
Paul, I hope you're happy. We got over 15 minutes of hockey talk.
Yep. Paul should be thrilled.
Just for you, Paul.
Paul and Mike.
Emma. NBA.
NBA.
Start Knicks Cavs, I guess. Knicks, very impressive game one performance against Cleveland. Brunson with 27, Randall with 19 and 10, but the key guy I thought off the bench was Hart with 17 off the bench and just making plays down the stretch. Good all around performance by the Knicks in game one. Cleveland, of course, comes back in game two. Difference in that game was the second quarter. Cleveland outscored the Knicks 34-17 and cruised to a win there. Hart in that game, 2-for-3 for 5 points.
Yep.
He was coming in injured.
Yep. It was a question if he would play or not. And then Brunson, Barrett, and Randall combined 17 for 50. You can't have those three shoot 34%.
I thought in game two, Cleveland really tied up Brunson really well. They made him work the whole game up. On offense, on defense, he was completely tied up with a lot of stuff. I think to me that was the biggest thing. And the other thing was for Cleveland, Garland just got hot in game two. Garland was on fire in game two for a good portion of that. Darren?
There's absolutely no reason for RJ Barrett to see the damn court inside of 6 minutes of a game. The Knicks tried to give away game one. They were turning the ball over in the last and within the last 4 minutes as much as they could. In fact, Cleveland took the lead. Knicks went from an 11-point lead to a 1-point deficit, and then Hart comes down, buries the three, turns the tide back. Hart's a better defender. Hart's a purer shooter, and he does all the little things. At the end of the game, I don't need to see RJ Barrett unless there's a bunch of other guys that are hurt. RJ Barrett, you know, if RJ Barrett shoots 34%, you're not surprised. It's the other guys that surprise you. RJ Barrett can't shoot. Listen, he's a nice player. He's athletic. He's a great role player. Unfortunately, you say that about a top five pick seems scary. But this team needs the Villanova connection of Brunson and Hart in order for them to win. And obviously Randall. And then Randall got, you know, he got blindsided with a bit of a dirty shot from Jared Allen in game two.
There's no need for that.
And they were picking on Thibodeau. Why is he playing? And Thibodeau was like, I tried to pull him. Randall asked to stay in because he wanted to get back in the flow because he had been banged up. And, you know, the thing, and you pointed out the key, G, Garland was just unstoppable. You know, the Knicks have to keep the Cav point guard in front of them. You know Spider's going to score his points, and you're willing to let that happen. But if Spider and Garland are scoring their points, it becomes a much harder night for the Knicks. Again, they go home 1-1. If you told me before the series started I was going home 1-1, happy.
Happy. Yep.
Want to find a way to win both games here at home and go out of this 3-1 heading back to Cleveland.
The guy I thought who played really, really well in game one and was okay in game two was Hartenstein. He looked really good game one.
A very big body, G. Very big body.
Yeah. You know, the combination usually of Robinson and Hartenstein, they play their 48 minutes combined. They give you the presence, the size in the middle.
Yeah.
And they always seem to combine. You look at their combined stats for 48 minutes, they're about 12 to 14 points. And somewhere around 15 rebounds, it feels like.
I mean, and if you, in a league now where seven-footers shoot a lot of threes, these are the two guys that don't.
Yep.
These are the two guys that had the range of about 6 feet, you know, except for a foul shot. But it's not really the way they play, but the Knicks don't rely on them to score. That's not really what they're looking for. They're looking for rebounding.
They don't try to go outside either.
Yeah,
they know their limitations. They're not chucking up threes just because they want to.
No, they are guys that know their role, and they play it well. And, you know, listen, you got your split. Now you go to the Nets and the Sixers just to keep the other local flavor. It's 2-0. Here's the thing. Game one, if I break it down, the Nets were outscored on points off turnovers by 20, and they lost by 20. All right? They committed 17 turnovers. Harden didn't miss. You say, all right, you got to clean up the turnover. So game two comes back, and they do. They actually get the turnovers down to 8. You know, they kind of control it. And they let Maxey go off on him. If you lose to Harden, you can live with it. You lose to Maxey, there's a problem. Bridges is becoming a star. I think he's a legitimate big-time player now. I don't think anybody just looks at him as a nice story anymore. But the Nets are going to need somebody else that can help put the puck in the net. Put the ball in the hoop, I should say. We're talking too much hockey.
That's what you get for watching hockey.
And as a guy that watches this team a little bit, I can't understand how Cam Thomas doesn't get on the court. You know, he can fill it up unless he's a horrible defensive liability, worse than I realize. I don't know why he can't get out there, especially when they're struggling offensively. You got to go with the instant offense guy. Even if you're giving him 6 minutes a half, just let him go out there and do something. Let him do a little Vinny Johnson microwave crap. Kev?
Game two, the Nets were up 5 at halftime. They only put up 35 in the second half. You've got to look for offense somewhere.
And they were up because Cam Johnson was hitting everything he was putting up in the first half. It wasn't even Bridges that really carried him. Even in game one, they were right there in the first half. Bridges had a monster first half. Right now, it's a scary proposition for the fact that they are they're gonna have to win game three at home. Otherwise, the series will end in 4. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. And we'll move right over to another series that looks like it's going to be over fairly quickly. Boston has won the first two games against Atlanta. Atlanta wasn't in the first game. Boston won by 13. They really weren't in the second game. Boston won by 13. So, guys, anything on Boston?
Well, here's the thing. We're up 30 at the half in game one, 74-44. It tells you everything you need to know. Atlanta might have made you think that they were going to come out with a little fire because of the way they won in Miami to clinch the spot, and they haven't shown up at all. And that's pretty much it. Boston's just a better team. The thing that happened is, and we'll talk about Milwaukee in a second, is Giannis got a little banged up. All of a sudden, Boston is now the favorite to win the whole thing. It was Milwaukee. That switched as soon as Giannis got banged up. Now it's Boston. That's how good Boston is. I predicted, I think, a sweep in that one. I'm going to stick with it.
I said Boston in 5. I still think Trae Young might steal a game here in Atlanta. He might put up one of his type of games. But I don't see this going anywhere more than 5. And a sweep wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then the other series in the East, the 1 seed Milwaukee against the 8 seed Miami. And Darren, you hinted at it. Giannis got hurt in that first game.
Only play Miami, 11 minutes.
Miami took over for a good portion of that game. Wound up winning 130 to 117. They wound up winning by 13. Kev?
And game two, it's all Milwaukee.
All Milwaukee.
What have I got? just starting the third quarter, 81-57.
Gotta love these defensive struggles.
Remember those Knicks Pistons games where 81 was the first one to 81 wins?
Listen, we saw Nick Heat games that was the first one to 71 would win.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was they were that ugly. Now the game is completely changed. But, yeah. You know, it's hard to imagine the Bucks falling apart in this one. You figure the series gets to 1-1 here. You know, Miami's done what they're supposed to do. They won a road game. If Giannis didn't play tonight, if he doesn't play in game three as well, he's got a legit chance of being 2-2 or even 3-1 Miami up coming out of that series and in really good position.
You know, tonight, you know, I kept saying, you know, first he was doubtful, they were hopeful, they were optimistic, he was questionable, he wound up not playing. You wonder how much of it was blowing smoke and how much of it is, okay, he needs a game, he'll be back for game three.
Yep.
You don't know in the playoffs.
No, we just don't know how that, and it's a back. You know, just don't know what it's going to be.
All right, and let's move to the West. Kev, which series do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with the controversy, the Kings-Warriors.
Start it off.
Kings are up. Is it 2-0, right?
2-0.
But the story was the stomp by Draymond Green on Sabonis. Green gets a one-game suspension for that. We didn't see it. I'm sure if you listen to this podcast, you're a sports fan, you've seen the highlight. Sabonis on the rebound gets knocked down to the ground and grabs Green's foot. Yes.
Let's just rewind one sec, Kev.
Yeah.
So Sacramento wins game one, 126-123. They play a great game. Game two happens. It's a good game going into the third, you know, late into the third. And then we have this whole incident with Draymond. Go ahead, Kev.
And then he tries to shake free, and he just gives a stomp
blatant. That
was just blatant right into Sabonis' sternum. And then after, like, Sabonis lets go, he gives him one more step on his chest to step over and gets one game suspension. I've never liked Draymond Green. He's the reason why, along with Steph, his antics, especially the last 5 or 6 years. But Green's a big reason. I just don't like the Warriors. He fits their scheme, but he's a guy that averages 8 points a year for the last 5 or 6 seasons. He's not that good. And his attitude, he's always played on the edge. He's always been among the league leaders in technical fouls. And he's been suspended from the playoffs before, and this is another game that he's been suspended for, and it's a big game for the Warriors. They really need to come out and win game three. Otherwise, they're in danger of being losing in 4 or 5.
Do you think he should have been suspended?
Yes. Yes.
Darren?
Given this Draymond Green, given his history, his history. Drawing a blank on the word I want to use, but that's okay.
You're not the best color man in the business for anything, folks.
Darren, go ahead, Jeff.
Go ahead, Darren.
Well, Darren, here's the thing.
First off, do you think he should be suspended?
Listen, Sabonis grabs his leg. Absolutely, he stomped him as hard as he could in the chest. That's blatant. That's flagrant. Listen, if he stepped on him, if he nailed him, if he got him on the arm, got him on the shoulder, got him on the leg, it's one thing. When you try to inhibit someone's breathing by stomping on their chest, it's a completely different game. It's almost as it's right there with stomping on his head. If you do either one of those two things, you're going to get suspended. There's no way around it. I know you have a comment on this, G.
So I do think he should have been suspended, but if you're the NBA and you're making the statement that he's been suspended, and part of it has to do with his history, you basically call into play the fact that maybe what he did was not that all that bad as far as being suspended. So the question I pose to both of you guys is, what if it was the other way and Draymond was on the floor, grabbed Sabonis' foot, and Sabonis stomped on him? Does Sabonis get suspended?
Yes.
Yes.
I agree with both of you.
That stomp, it was not a kick. It wasn't,
I agree with both of you.
It wasn't a kick. Here's the thing about this. First and foremost, the Draymond Green thing. They talk about him as a potential Hall of Famer. Makes me laugh. I'm not joking. You want to talk about a guy that would have been out of the league 5 years ago if he wasn't drafted by the right team? His name is Draymond Green. He's got no offensive skills. He's got long arms. He can block shots. He sets picks. If he was drafted into a mediocre team, he would be useless. To be perfectly honest, he'd be flat out useless. He's a dirty player. He's been a dirty player. Even if you watch the game and just watch it, the amount of pushes in the back he gets away with, the amount of things he does to guys while he's setting picks and drives them under the basket, moving picks he gets away with left and right, and then he cries about every time somebody touches his foot. Now, Sabonis grabbed his foot hard. He didn't just hold it. I mean, he held it like he didn't want to let him go. I mean, he deserved to get a foul on it as well for what he did. But
yeah, gee, and it deservedly so.
And he deserved it. But Draymond Green, I'd love to find a guy that's less valuable, that gets more credit for being good than Draymond Green. I don't know if it exists. I really don't. Sacramento, by the way, they've done what they're supposed to do. The series have been good. You know, Steph with his flailing, he gets a bunch of foul calls that he probably doesn't deserve. And the Aaron Fox isn't going to get those calls back. And it's just the way it works. But overall, the interesting thing in game one was this was only the second time two teammates that played together in college had 30 points in the same game in an NBA playoff game. The other the tandem they tied up with was Olajuwon and Drexler with Houston. Wow. So Monk and Fox each scoring 30 in game one was something that really stood out, so to speak. You know what I mean? And Monk is a hell of a sixth man coming in off the bench. Zach can score. I mean, if you really like watching half court basketball, this isn't your series, because all these two teams do is push it up and shoot. G?
So here's the only thing. And listen, I like Sacramento for game three, but the one thing we need to just make sure we understand is that the Golden State Warriors had the most, had the least amount of road wins of every playoff team.
11 and 30.
They had 11 wins on the road. So you kind of knew that they weren't going to play well on the road. They haven't played well on the road all year. Curious to see as they get back home, if this changes a little bit. I honestly think Sacramento's winning game three with no Draymond. Now, what happens game four? I don't know. We'll see. Guys, what do you think?
I think Golden State's still dangerous at home. I wouldn't dismiss them. I think Golden State finds a way to win game three. Yeah, I think the series is going seven. I think it goes the long route. I think each team wins their home games. I just think it's going to be that way, even without Draymond. Listen, you know me. You guys know me a long time. I like the Kings. It's a team I follow. It's not my favorite. It's my West Coast team, the team I rooted for since Kenny Smith was drafted. He went to our high school. That's how long I've been rooting for the Kings. And and obviously Kenny's been long gone from the NBA, so it's been a long time. I can't see the Kings running away with this that easily. I just don't think they're a good enough defensive team to do that. Kev?
Yeah, you're still not over Kings-Lakers from the playoffs years ago.
I mean, Donahue admitted he freaking threw the freaking series. I mean, my God, Donahue came out and said it wasn't on the level. Honestly, that series made me stop watching the NBA. I'm not joking. It was so rigged. It was unbelievable. The Kings should have been in the finals that year.
Yep. And the Kings were fun teams. Those were fun teams for the Kings.
You know, teams actually played in the half court back then. It was fun. Yep. Now this is a game where a guy drives into the paint and kicks it out for a three constantly when they're only down one. They line up for a three. I just don't understand the sport anymore. It's too much of just freewheeling and shooting jumpers. I like to see guys drive. I don't know. My take.
Yeah. Grizzlies, Lakers. Lakers win game one by 16. The big story in that game was Ja Morant getting hurt while charging there, landing on his hand that he had hurt a few weeks ago. He missed game two. Apparently, the Grizzlies did not miss him. The Grizzlies bounced back with a 103-93 win. Anything on that, Darren?
Well, I mean, to me, you know, the thing about the Grizzlies is they don't have a lot of household names, but they have a really good team. L.A.'s got the aging veterans. The key for L.A. to win this series is going to be how good Anthony Davis plays, to be honest. If he can dominate the middle, the Lakers will win. if the Grizzlies can kind of keep him a little bit under control, the Grizzlies will win the series. I picked the Grizz early in the series. Obviously, it was before I knew Morant wasn't playing. I still think that they'll find a way to get through. I just think that they're a little bit more of a complete team. That's just my take.
All right.
Clippers and Clippers and Phoenix, I think, is one we have to touch on.
Yeah, that was next. They split the first two games. Clippers won the first one by five. The Suns bounced back with a 14-point win in the second game. Darren, you want?
Well, here's the thing with this. I've never seen a guy play a better game shooting 3-for-19 than Russell Westbrook played in game one. The plays he made down the stretch defensively were unbelievable. The block shot, throwing it off of Booker. You know, it was amazing. But all night he played amazing defense. The son of a gun shot 3-for-19. He was awful, but he hit a couple clutch foul shots. As I don't know if you guys heard the story about Westbrook. I don't know if you heard this. So there was it's a nickname that's happened to him because he can't shoot.
Yeah.
And there was a guy in the luxury suite that was calling him Westbrook when he was shooting foul shots in the first half. At halftime, you walk by the luxury suites. He walked into that suite. The little kid's eating. He starts yelling at the father for calling him Westbrook. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It was hysterical. Clippers did what they had to do. They're playing without Paul George. If Paul George was playing, I mean, I would have really liked them to win this series because Kawhi is probably the most underrated superstar player in the league. He never gets the credit he deserves, and Westbrook can certainly get some damage done. I just think at the end of the day, Phoenix will have too much. I think Devin Booker going off in game two was a big reason why when you get guys like Booker to go along with Durant, to go along with Paul, to go along with Ayton. They have just too many weapons, I think. I think if George was playing, it would be a hell of a series. By the way, fisticuffs going on in Florida, Boston. I mean, it's getting nasty. I mean, that game's getting 6-3 with a minute 10 to go. Lots of penalty minutes going on in there. Anyway.
a big crush back with about a minute 12 left, by the way.
Absolutely. It's getting nasty over there. But yeah, your thoughts on it, Kev?
Yeah, I agree with you there. Obviously, Paul George is a big loss for the Clippers. The fact that they did split 1-1 even without George just shows that the Clippers are a very good team. They're going to need more from Westbrook. Yes, you know, he contributed other ways, but he needs to shoot better than 3-for-19 for them to have a chance to win the series.
He actually shot well yesterday, and they lost. It's kind of funny. For him, it was a really good shooting performance. And Kawhi was okay. They're just going to need everybody to contribute. They need all hands on deck to win that series. They're just on the man without Paul George.
I mean, I guess Phoenix can have a guy not play well and still win because they've got enough depth.
Absolutely.
Okay,
and the last series.
Go ahead, Kev.
Nuggets-Wolves. Nuggets won game one by 29, and they're winning the second game early. They're in the first quarter, and Denver's up by about 10. Any chances of the Wolves making this a series?
I thought that Karl Anthony Towns would be more of a factor, and he was awful in game one. I actually thought this series would go a lot deeper than you guys did, and looks like I'm way off. Unless Minnesota comes out game one playing well, it's hard to imagine right now. Denver just looks like a world beater right now.
Okay. All right. We will move on from the NBA, and we'll move to a little baseball. Yankees and Mets both playing well, dealing with injuries all over the place, but both teams playing well. Kev, want to talk a little Mets?
Yeah. Brett Beatty gets the recall.
Finally.
And there's 1-for-8.
I got to tell you, though, I know why they did it, because it was Kershaw. I would have played him in game two. I would have played him in game two. You just called them up. What do you think? It's going to throw a swing off? Come on, whatever. Just let him play. Kershaw's 40, whatever the hell he is. Let him bat off him.
And he threw a 5-hitter shutout against the Mets.
I know. But the fact of the matter is, the Mets still find a way to win the series, and you'll talk about Scherzer's antics today, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Another brawl going on in Boston. And this is going to be a hell of a series going back to Sunrise. My goodness.
Oh, these two teams just don't like each other.
Oh, it's game two. And Boston's not used to losing or giving up 6 goals. This is fun. There's 3 seconds left, and there's 2 guys rolling around on the ice. Love it.
Anyway, are they done yet? Or are they going to have one more?
Bring me back to Patrick Division. Let's go.
Put on the foil, boys.
And they get up and they still want to fight. I love it. Anyway, go ahead, Kev. Sorry.
But my feeling was that, you know, I mean, I don't know, the Dodgers carrying three lefties in the bullpen. So both games, there were two at-bats late where Beatty was left in there against the lefty reliever. So I was glad to see that. I wasn't totally upset with them not playing against Kershaw. To me, if they're playing against the equivalent of Peterson, you have to start Beatty. I mean, you know, Kershaw, I didn't mind him not starting that game.
He's Randy Johnson to me. He's not throwing 98 and at your head. It's Clayton Kershaw. He's still tough to hit, but he's tough to hit for righties too. I mean, Escobar's that awful where I don't even want to see his bat in the lineup. I'm just being honest. If a guy's hitting 100, I don't need to see him.
Yeah.
You think he's going to do something against Kershaw? It's like just saying we're going to give you the outs because we don't want the kid to embarrass himself. Let the kid embarrass himself.
But overall, they're 12-7. And really, the only bad series has been that Milwaukee series where they got swept in the three. They took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. They took 2 out of 3 from the Padres, the two good teams they've played. And they're 12-7 despite only playing 6 home games so far. They've got 4 more on the road in San Fran coming up. Who's going to pitch for them? Who knows? Now, we know Senga goes tomorrow. Friday's up in the air because Carlos Carrasco, even though he wasn't off to a good start, he's on the injured list. Bone spur in the elbow. He'll be reevaluated in about a week. Darren?
And Scherzer today getting the boot, right? Now, if they find that he had a sticky substance, he's out 10 games.
Yep.
That's your start. So hopefully it's just because he's yelling, it's rosin, it's rosin, it's rosin. And I hope he's right. I don't want to see Max Scherzer get suspended 10 games. Gino does, but I don't really want to see it.
Hearing him after the game and when he was being interviewed, and it's rosin. Okay, it's rosin and sweat. They made him wash the hands. He said he's got a major league official watching him wash his hands with alcohol. Goes back there, puts the rosin back on because, you know, he's trying to get some grip on the ball. And Phil Cuzzy decides, nah, you're out of here.
Phil Cuzzy. Another one of those amazing umpires in this league that wants it to be about him. Now, listen, I'm not a Met fan, so I had no dog in the fight. They're checking pitchers much more than they have in the past. It's a point of emphasis. I don't know if it'll be all season or just the first month. But, you know, he was off to a good start today. It would have been nice to see if he could have gone 6, unlike most of the Mets starters that don't like to do that.
And like you said, they checked him going out for the third inning. They made him change his glove. He said he'd be an idiot to do anything, knowing they're going to probably check him going out for the fourth inning, too.
Agreed.
You know?
Listen, I picked him to win the Cy Young with you, Darren, so I'm not betting against the guy. However, he is a troublemaker, and I wouldn't put it past him if he was doing it.
Well, listen, you saw what Gerrit Cole had to go through with a similar kind of accusations that he couldn't pitch without the tacky stuff. And now Scherzer's going to deal with the same stuff, and you know he'll be called a cheater on every road start he has for the rest of the year. Just the way it works, as long as there's a crowd there.
Yep.
Any other points, Kev?
Yeah, and a week ago, Brandon Nimmo was hitting under 200. He got red hot on this road trip. He's now up to 349 with a 9 base of 481.
Yeah, the beauty about that, when you go 5 for 5 in a game like today, it helps.
Oh, yeah. But the on base has been near 500
all season.
I mean, he's doing what Leo is supposed to do. He's making that $20 million a year contract look like a bargain so far.
The funny thing is he saved 2 games in Oakland with catches. He really did. He's been Gold Glove center fielder. It's been Jim Edmonds like for me to watch him out in center field. And I know there's other great center fielders, but when I think of guys making sliding, diving catches, Edmonds always tops the list for me. And he's been like Jim Edmonds out in center so far.
And just before we leave the Mets, just because they played them, the Dodgers are 9-10, and understand that Will Smith is on the concussion DL. And understand that Mookie Betts is on paternity leave. But the Dodgers fielded a lineup today with Max Muncy batting 4th and Jason Hayward batting 5th. I know Muncy can hit home runs.
He's like taking homers, though. Muncy is hitting the ball out of the yard.
I know Muncy hits home runs, but that's all he does. But no, Jason Hayward hit 5th?
Oh, Jason Hayward. I thought he was out of the league, and then I realized he's playing for the Dodgers.
I mean, that's just surprising how bad the Dodgers, the start, has been for them.
Nope, absolutely.
But they're lucky.
They're a bad start, too.
and that division. So, you know, they get Tatis back tomorrow, though, so I'm excited about that.
Arizona's 11-8. Everybody else is under 500.
Well, the thing about the Padres, and I'm just going to give them credit for losing 2 out of 3 to Atlanta, is you scored one run in 3 games and you didn't get swept.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that, but they found a way.
1-0 today.
Nick Martinez pitched a gem who had been awful all season long. The pods of they knocked off Charlie Morton 1-0. The Mets sweeping the A's, you have to beat those bad teams and they beat them. And then you take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers in a game where your ace gets thrown out in the third. And was it Yacobelis? What's his name?
I'm blanking on Yacobonis was the big
I said Yacobelis. Yacobonis, gets out of a little bit of a jam, and the Mets cruise along.
June 2/3 needed relief for him today.
Nah, listen, the Mets are playing good. The Braves are playing good. It's going to be a nice race. All the Phillies are not. So let's see what happens there.
Yankees talk. Who wants to lead it off?
Go ahead, G.
So they are 11-7 after tonight's win in 10 against the Angels. Listen, the Stanton injury is going to hurt. We're going to see how quick he can come back. He's out now probably till June 1st. Listen, it hurt, Darren, it hurts because we got to see Franchi Cordero and Aaron Hicks and Willie Calhoun play outfield, at least until Bader comes back and gives them some kind of relief. But, between Judge being out there and these three guys, and then Oswaldo Cabrera, those are your outfielders right now. The injury hurts. The other thing was that we heard that the Rodon injury is he tweaked something else in the back, and he's still due for mid-May. We'll see if that gets pushed back. Hopefully it doesn't, because they're going to need some starters at some point. The bright spots on this team, Judge hit his 6th home run today. Rizzo's playing really well. Gleyber Torres is playing well. He's not playing great, but he's playing well. He's got a couple of home runs. Franchi Cordero keeps chipping in with a home run every once in a while. Darren favorite.
I like Franchi.
Volpe has looked okay.
He's stealing bases.
He's not hitting the ball really well at the moment, but he's getting on base with some walks. He's got 8 stolen bases after tonight.
How's the defense looking for him?
Okay. He's been probably above average at the moment.
Good.
He's been fine. Hasn't been spectacular. He's been good.
Yeah.
No, but that's what you're doing is a rookie where you're like, oh my God, but he's good.
No, but while he's struggling at the plate, you want him to at least play good defense.
Yeah. No, he has been playing good defense too. The huge bright spot for this team is Gerrit Cole right now. He's 4-0. He's given up 13 hits in 28 innings. His ERA is under 1. And listen, surprisingly, the bullpen is doing okay between Holmes and King and Marinaccio and Peralta. They're getting the job done. I know, Darren, you're going to tell me that they're so-so, but they are getting the job done. They're not looking great doing it, but they are getting the job done.
And everybody except Holmes and King. The two have been fine.
The issue is, if you look around baseball right now, there's no big bullpen arms that are really just lighting the world on fire at the moment.
Bednar is.
I mean, I saw somebody's post the other night. I think we may have been Bill on his own page. Like you said, the Yankee lineup Tuesday night, the bottom three hitters, IKF, Higashioka, and Hicks. Does it get much worse than that?
Well,
not for a team that's supposed to score a lot of runs.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that stood out for me for the Yankees. The Rodon thing, like you said, still in pain. Bader's about to go on a rehab assignment, so he should be back soon. They're also saying Severino's on his way to go into a rehab assignment shortly. That's needed. So get those two guys that back. That's great. Clark Schmidt, please stop. Stop. I can't watch him pitch. He sucks. It's not even that he's not good. He's bad. He sucks.
Until some of these guys come off the DL, he's going to get another couple of starts, Darren.
Oh, I'd rather pitch Herman twice. I don't know, but bring El Duque back. Give me something. Herman actually pitched well in his last start. I'll give him the nod back. Bring El Duque's like 65. He could probably throw better than Clark Schmidt.
If you go by Eldukie's real age, he's probably 74. So,
and you know what? He could probably still throw it about 67 miles an hour and get a couple guys out. He would have no chance of being successful with this pitch clock, though. None whatsoever. He's the only guy. He's worse than Pettit, if that's possible, in how deliberate he was. Peraza coming up, okay. They split the series with the Twins, which was crazy because the Yankees never split any series with the Twins. They usually own the Twins. They had to come back and win the last two to get it, and Herman had a big start to get them down 2-1, and then Cole, put it down, put down the anchor on Sunday to help them out, which was important. They were selling Ohtani jerseys at the stadium and doing well with it, by the way. They had Ohtani jerseys going all over the place. My big problem is Clark Schmidt. I really can't watch him pitch. Not only is he not good, he's just not even enjoyable to watch. He gets two strikes on everybody, then he nibbles and he walks everybody. Or, oh, my God. Just too much. They need a little bit of help with the order, and then you need Bader back as quick as you possibly can. And the fact that you're surprised that Stanton got hurt surprises me. We all knew Stanton was going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, it's just who he is. The guy simply runs down the first base, pulls a hamstring, calls it a day. That's who Giancarlo Stanton has become. It's sad, but it's fact. You almost don't expect him to play more than 115 to 120 games now in any season. Edmonton goes up 2-0.
Yeah.
Anyway.
In that division, Tampa, if you're done with the Yankees.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, go ahead, Kev.
In that division, Tampa, 15-3. Again, looking at their schedule, they just took 2 out of 3 from Cincy. Their schedule's not been good. The only good team they've played.
Toronto,
they lost 2 of 3 at Toronto this weekend. Coming up, they've got the White Sox, 2 series surrounding a 3-game set against Houston. Yankees need to stay close because I was looking at their May schedule. Between the 5th and the 28th, they play 23 games in 24 days. 3 against the Yankees. Then they're at Baltimore, at the Yankees, at the Mets, home for Milwaukee, home for Toronto, home for the Dodgers. That'll tell you.
That'll tell us how good they are.
If the team is real or not.
Yeah, this series against Cincinnati was interesting. There were 3 blowout shutouts.
Yeah.
Cincinnati won 1 in a blowout shutout, and Tampa won 2 in blowout shutouts. So not one competitive game in the bunch. So if you have a fantasy team with a closer on either one of those teams, never got a sniff.
Yep.
And speaking of the Reds, by the way, signing Green for the extended contract. Again, when you throw 104 miles per hour, they toss you at $9 million a year and to buy a couple of years arbitration out.
I've got one other baseball note for the Rangers. Jacob DeGrom, the other night, 4 no-hit innings. Ooh, my wrist is a little bit sore. Let me come out.
You can say what you want, but Verlander hasn't even thrown yet.
No doubt. But this is why I think Mets would have been more than happy to give DeGrom Justin Verlander contract. 2 years, $43.3 million each. They would have been glad to do that. Texas is going to have to live with this for 5 years. If he lasts that long.
No, you're right. He's a guy that the minute he feels soreness, he does not pitch. He just refuses to pitch through any kind of pain or discomfort. I'm not saying you're supposed to, but it just doesn't feel like he's a warrior. He's very good when he's going. By the way, in this L.A. Edmonton game, we're over 13 minutes in, and L.A. doesn't have a shot yet. Interesting stat. just in baseball, Sonny Gray, ERA of 0.53. Wow. Nick Horner, 9 stolen bases leading the way. Nico Horner, I should say, not Nick. Alonso and Wisdom. Wisdom leading the league in home runs with Alonso, which is interesting. Arias continues to hit the crap out of the ball. Acuna, Stott, Marsh. Not exactly household names up top there in the batting. Think of Matt Chapman. Mountcastle's having a monster year, as is Alvarez driving in the ball. So a lot of interesting things going on. Red Sox playing those yellow uniforms. Stop. Get a Boston Red Sox. Stop. It's almost as good as the damn patch. Red Sox, wear your uniform always. Don't change it. You're a heritage team. Stop. Oh, I hate that. I hate it. You guys have any other major league points? Because I had one college baseball point, if I could.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go just ahead. A silly thing. Mississippi State drew just short of 15,000 people for a regular season game this week. The record for any college baseball game ever, drawing 15,000 people down to a game in Starkville. That will outdraw at least 5 or 6 A's games, and that will at least outdraw like probably 8 or 10 Rays games. I'm just saying, college baseball is not a sport that anyone really thinks about until the World Series of any kind of value to it. But I mean, you know, for a college team to draw 15,000 for a regular season game, I thought it was kind of impressive. Just wanted to share that little tidbit with you guys.
College baseball is an SEC sport.
It is. It's very much ACC, SEC.
And again, I'm showing my South Carolina bias, but by the email distribution, they always took Carolina. But you look at the top 25 poll, there's about, I think, 8 SEC teams in the top 25.
Yeah, I think there's 5 ACC. They almost dominate just the two conferences.
Yeah.
You get a little bit from the Pac-12 and a little bit from the Big 12. Like TCU's usually up there, and a couple of schools from Baylor, stuff like that. Oregon State's been up there a little bit, UCLA. But it's really an SEC sport where, you know, you feel like almost every team in the SEC is going to make the regionals and then go to the super regionals. It's just the way it works in college baseball.
Okay. NFL draft is coming up next week, right?
1 week away, yep.
Still going.
I thought it'd be interesting to just look at the very top of the draft board.
Go ahead.
So we know Carolina's on the clock.
Yep.
We're 99.99999% sure that they're going quarterback.
Yeah, I'd say 100%.
Young or Stroud?
I have Stroud going one.
I have Stroud going one.
I think they may take Young, but I we talked about it a little bit last week. None of us like Young size. He's 5'10 with a slight build. Stroud 6'3, 215. Stroud's accurate. He had a great year. And I really think he should be the number one pick. Yeah, I feel more confident with Stroud less than.
I agree with you.
So do I.
Texans are second. They should be taking the other quarterback, whoever's not taking one.
I have Young going there.
Agreed.
Then comes the first interesting pick, the Cardinals at number 3. If they stay there, they're likely going D. They should probably be taking Will Anderson from Alabama.
That's my pick.
That's a spot. Do they look to trade down to one of the teams looking to trade up if they like one of the remaining quarterbacks?
Well, they
and
just
then how far down do they go?
They gave so much money to Kyler. You know, can you afford to have a second quarterback on there for that kind of money?
No, do they trade down?
No, if they trade down.
Do the Cardinals trade down to somebody
looking
to trade up? Oh, I think
they want to trade up for a quarterback. My bad. I misunderstood you.
Nope, that's okay. I probably mumbled.
Well, no, you probably didn't. I probably missed it. I think Indy's taking a quarterback at 4 anyway.
Yeah.
So if it's going to be a team that wants to get ahead of Indy that would want to do it. Either you love Robinson or you love Nevis, one or the other. Those are the two quarterbacks you're looking at.
Or do the Colts want to trade up to 3 and make sure they get the guy they want?
Well, I mean, they're going to be threatened that someone else is going to pass them. I honestly think that I could see Arizona trading down a couple of spots. I really could.
Yeah.
So
Colts at 4 going quarterback.
Yep. I haven't gone with Nevis over Robinson. I know some people see it the other way. I just think Nevis is the better quarterback. Robinson really didn't show much in college. I know
Richardson?
He can run.
Richardson?
What? Oh, I'm sorry. Richardson. Whatever.
But yeah, Levis was not accurate. Levis was a gunslinger. Turned the ball over a lot. Richardson was not accurate. Completed 53% of his passes at Florida.
If you can't complete passes in college, you're not going to complete them in the pros. I'm sorry, you're just not going to. I know everybody wants a guy that can run, but it doesn't mean that much if you can't throw ever.
Then at 5, you've got the Seahawks. They've got this pick from Denver in that Russell Wilson trade. By talent,
I like Tony Wilson to go there from Texas Tech.
You like Wilson? What? Just by talent, ignoring his off-field issues, Jalen Carter.
Listen, Jalen Carter is probably one of the most talented players, you know, out there. I think that pass rush is always seen a little bit more valuable than run stopping defensive tackle that can push the pocket. I just think that Wilson's position makes him more desirable for Seattle.
Or if the Cardinals, they put a three and take Anderson,
mm-hmm.
that leaves the last remaining quarterback among the top four there at the fifth pick. Here's Seattle, you have to think about trading down from there too.
And also, you could also think about as Seattle of taking him if you think that Richardson's a project, because the simple fact of the matter is you only signed Geno really for two guaranteed years. So if you think he's a project and you're willing to let him sit for a year, it's not a horrible move for them.
Who? He's coming off an ACL, but who do you like better? Richardson, Levis? Or do you try to get Hendon Hooker?
Yeah, easy for us to say.
Yeah, from Tennessee.
I don't know.
At the top of the second round.
Yeah, to me, Hendon Hooker, I don't know if he was a first-round pick even if he was healthy. I don't think he has the mechanics of a great quarterback either, in my opinion. Nor does he have great size, in my opinion. Levis is the guy with the size. He's big. He can throw, and he can run. I mean, listen, he's a jerk, though.
Levis reminds me of Josh Allen a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Levis is, he's big and he's strong. Again, he's not the most accurate guy, Levis, but the thing about him is that, you just don't hear he's that popular a guy. You don't hear that he's that nice a guy. It's the draft day thing.
Yep.
Yeah, he had a birthday party and none of his teammates went. You just don't know if that's the situation, but I think talent wise, it's almost like a Jeff George situation. You know, he can throw it anywhere. Is he going to be able to win for you?
I think
quarterbacks haven't exactly been great. G?
I think if you're Seattle, you're sitting there and you're watching what happens with the first picks that are coming off the board and seeing who's coming off the board. And if you are, because in all reality, you could have a QB1, a QB2, and then a trade to the three and another QB taken, and then Indy takes another QB at four, and all of a sudden all four quarterbacks are gone. Right. So I think
Seattle gets to choose who they think is the best non-quarterback.
And that's it. And I think that's what Seattle does. They don't make a move to try to move up or try to move down. They sit there and let's see what comes to us at that point. Because if one of those quarterbacks is sitting there at four, at five for them, I could see them pulling the trigger on one of those quarterbacks if they love the quarterback. Because
you got to figure
three of the four are off the board at that point, the quarterbacks, right? So it's got to be the quarterback you guys like, and if you don't like that quarterback, you're going to go to another position.
And you also have the opportunity of a later pick. You got to remember that. So if they do like Hooker or they do like someone that's going to slip down either late first or second round and they think they have a shot at Hooker, they might pass on it. They can also trade down and accumulate even more picks. There's a lot of things Seattle can do with this five spot.
They've got five. They've got 20, their own pick in the first round, and they've got 37 overall. Yep.
They have
early
three,
second round.
Yeah, three in the top 40 is amazing, you know?
Yep.
Well, the other thing that could happen with that, Kev, is if three of the four quarterbacks go in the first four picks and Seattle's sitting there, if one of those other teams really likes that fourth quarterback, they may go to Seattle and see if they could trade up so that they could take that quarterback. So I think Seattle's probably in a good spot at that pick at the moment.
The other teams behind Seattle don't necessarily need a quarterback. You'd probably if the quarterbacks drops. If one of them drops below down to Seattle, the next team up who might draft a quarterback would be down at 11 at Tennessee.
Atlanta could be. They may not be in love with the kid Ritter. They may not.
They may not,
And they're saying that they like him. I mean, we'll see. And Tennessee, you know, Waynes was only a second-round pick, so it's not like it's a first-round talent that you're giving up on if you don't like him. He looked awful.
He was bad.
When he played, he looked horrendous. So it could be the 11 spot with Tennessee as well. I agree with you.
Then we come down to 13 with our JETS.
Who picks 13?
Offensive tackle.
Yeah, I don't think he's much of a – you're taking the best one available.
Goronsky probably goes earlier there.
I have him going to Chicago, so I have him getting off the board at, a couple of picks early.
Yep. So you're probably looking at either Broderick Jones from Georgia or Paris Johnson from Ohio State.
I have him getting Johnson in mine. I have Jones going to Tennessee. I have Skoronski going to Chicago, and I have us getting Paris Johnson as the third one.
But I think there's very little doubt that you've got that there. Then let me just jump ahead to the second round real quick for them. They're picking 42 and 43 as of right now. You're assuming one of those picks goes if they ever get this Aaron Rodgers deal done.
Yeah.
With the other one, I mean, I'm seeing Joe Tettman, the center from Wisconsin.
You know, I hate our center play.
That makes too much sense to screw up. Yeah, and awesome. Joe Douglas likes drafting those linemen, both sides of the ball.
To be honest with you, I like the kid from Minnesota, but he won't most likely be there. Mintz is the best center out there on the board, and he won't make it, I don't think. I don't like our center. I've wanted to change that position for 2 years. I've not been sold on him. It's a position you like to see. You know, listen, there's a lot of things about the Jets that there are a few holes. We act like there are none, but there are a few. We don't have a true free safety if they see somebody that's dynamic. We got two strong safeties right now. Yeah. It's definitely a situation that you want to upgrade, but, you know, last year's free safety Joyner wasn't anything special anyway. It could be free agency. It could be it could be something that they make a draft pick for in that second round, too, if there's someone that jumps off the tape. But I like the idea of the center position.
Yep. And then at 25, hard to predict at that point in the draft, but the Giants are up with their first pick at 25.
I think it will be weapons. I think it's got to be a receiver. I think you got to try to get weapons for the kid as much as you can.
I'm reading, you know, they're talking there's about three receivers they feel with a first-round grade. You've got Smith and Njigba.
Yep.
You've got Zay Flowers, and you've got Jordan Addison.
I think Addison's the guy they end up with, in my opinion.
If he gets down to 25, he'd be the guy. If he goes a couple of picks before that, he can't be reaching for a wide receiver late in the first round there.
I don't think Johnston from TCU is that far off, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think he's better than they get. He's a big target. I think he's better than they're getting credit for. The other thing is that the Giants, in this league, you can never have enough guys that can cover. You can never have enough cornerbacks, and it could be another position the Giants go for as well. G, what do you think about for your Washington newly owned whatever the hell
new ownership?
Yeah, your new ownership.
Commanders,
whatever they are, always the Redskins to me. Who do you like them picking? First round, is there any position you want to see filled?
Everything I'm looking at says that they're probably going for a cornerback.
Yeah, I see this kid Banks from Maryland is the guy. I don't know what you've seen.
Well, the other thing I saw was Joey Porter Jr. from Penn State.
It just seems like that would be unfair if he doesn't end up in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just wishful thinking that the kid plays for the same school, same team that his father did. I don't know. They're one pick apart. Joey Porter had a great career at Penn State. Banks is a good player over at Maryland. Mississippi State's got a kid that can play cornerback as well. Kansas State's got the kid Brents. There's a bunch of guys that they could look at. So
yeah.
I think they're going to go defensive back as well.
Yeah, that's the way I see them playing it.
So I heard today that the 49ers are shopping Lance. That could throw the monkey wrench in the Rodgers deal if needed, if they decide that Purdy's not back. I'm just saying that's the one team that you feel like could throw the monkey wrench. I think that Rodgers ends up here. I do. I'd be surprised if he didn't. I don't think Woody will be outbid on him. But it's just one of those little curveballs being thrown at us there, guys.
Yep.
Okay. Any other points, Kev? You want to touch on the golf?
Real quick. Yeah, real quick, the RBC Heritage at in the Sea Pines in Hilton Head Island. Matthew Fitzpatrick wins in the third hole, the third extra hole over Jordan Spieth.
What a great shot, by the way. Oh, God.
He hit a shot on the third hole. They played 18, and this shot, it was an iron play. I think it was about 9-iron.
Yeah.
And he hit front of the green, and it just rolled and rolled and rolled to, what, about 4 inches from the hole?
Yeah, it was just a tap-in.
It was a tap-in. And the Spieth on the first two playoff holes, they played 18 first, then they went back to 17 and then 18. On both of the first two holes, Spieth had great looks at birdie. Especially the one in 18, the first time they played it, he burned the edge of the at right side of the cup. Maybe just that pinch too much speed. Otherwise, that would have dropped. So Spieth won last year in extra, beating Cantlay. This year loses in the third extra hole to Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick, if you remember, won the 2022 U.S. Open. So he's one of the young English golfers that is definitely stepping up here. Cantlay finished one stroke back. Shoffley was two back. And then just a little bit further back, Scottie Scheffler was tied for 11th. And John Rahm off the Masters had a nice tournament, especially off the Masters. He spent the letdown. He finished tied for 15th. So good job by him.
Two points. Number one, Fitzpatrick's been visiting this course since he was a kid. His parents vacation here every year. So he kind of got to play this course when he was a young kid. And they visit and they love it. So I thought that was interesting. Rahm, when asked why he didn't back out, because a lot of people thought he was going to back out after the emotional win of the Masters, said, well, there's going to be a family or some kid that's going out there that bought tickets for this event, and they're going to want to see the Masters champion, and I owe that to the sport. Thought it was a classy move by John Rahm. Yeah, I just like the way he said it. I like the way he did it because, you know, Rory was the only major player that didn't play, and the leaderboard was great. You know, you always like, listen, golf is best when we have a good leaderboard. If Tiger if Tiger's healthy and he's able to stay in the leaderboard, that's the only thing that makes it a little bit better.
Speaking of Tiger, he had surgery today or over the weekend, it looked like, on his right ankle.
Yeah.
Some procedure to clean up some of the arthritis that's in there. No timetable on his return yet.
Hopefully we get him for the U.S. Open.
Yep. This week they were New Orleans for the Zurich Classic. It's the only tournament with teams.
Teams. Yep.
And, boy, look at the field. You've got the favorites. Cantlay and Shoffley are the favorites at plus 300. Second choice is Morikawa, Homa at plus 800. And the rest of the field is just not that good. Quite frankly,
anything can happen with guys that aren't used to playing teams, though. So you just don't know.
I think the third choice was like Im and Mitchell as a